This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today this episode is brought to you by Reveal Cell Cams and Code Blue Sense. Go check out those partners. Let them know I sent you. I do have a discount code for Code Blue, and that is NFC20. Go to their website, check out their products, and I don't know. If you have any questions, hit me up. Today's guest is Mr. Chris Romano. He is the host of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, a newly added podcast within the last, you guys are at like almost 40 episodes now though.
The 39th episode just posted this morning. So
yeah. Yeah. So you guys have been knocking those out, man. How do you like podcasting so far?
I really enjoy it. The second 20 have definitely been less nerve-wracking than the first than the first 20. What I mean by that is like just hearing myself talk, like I actually heard the podcast you did with Mitch that aired yesterday, and you had said like you believe you were put on this earth by God to talk.
Yeah.
And anyone who knows me kind of feels the same way. But talking with a purpose I found to be a little tough.
Yeah.
But you know, the guests that I've met, I've already made like some decent friends just simply through podcasting, which has been really cool. Seeing different perspectives and hearing, you know, different people's perspectives and stuff like that. And it gives me an opportunity to educate on something I truly enjoy, versus just spending time in a classroom teaching kids that may or may not be interested in what I'm teaching.
Right.
You know, the best part of podcasting is the people who come to listen are looking for the information you have to offer. You're not trying to force feed someone something to someone who doesn't want it.
Right. I will say this, one of my latest episodes, I'm not sure how many months ago you were on, like 2 months ago or something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yep. We did a podcast together, and it really wasn't about like hunting too terribly much. Uh-uh. It was more about like him at, you being a teacher and like kids and stuff like that. And, it was a really fun episode. So if you haven't had an opportunity to go check that one out, go do that.
I don't know. I don't even know what number it would be, but it's it just had Chris here as the guest. So go Google it or check it out or whatever the case is. Okay. But here's the deal. This is the Hunting Gear Podcast. We're going to talk about hunting gear and equipment, specifically arrows. You have decided, catch this story. Did you start an arrow company?
So I haven't started an arrow company. I'm starting a custom arrow building service company, I guess.
Okay.
You could say.
All right. Explain what that is.
So for our listeners, or your listeners or anyone's listeners who have followed with our podcast for the last couple of months, Dorge and I have a Fire Knock have partnered up.
You got to explain who this guy is. Dorge.
Okay, no problem.
Because I honestly didn't even know about this guy until you started talking about him.
Cool. So, to summarize, he is touted as the smartest man in archery, essentially. By trade, I guess you could say, he's an astrophysicist. He is an accountant. He's a lawyer. He's got all these different degrees. Like, he is just like a plethora of information in whatever avenue you want to talk about. He's probably got experience and some information in it. Mm-hmm. But back in like the early 2000s, he set out to research the science behind arrow flight. And it really all started with a defense contract that he had for the military, where they wanted him to create some kind of lighted system that they could fire. And it would function when they needed it to function, regardless of how cold it was, how hot it was, or how long it needed to run. So that he designed that with a couple other people, and it ended up never going anywhere, from what I understand. But he took that technology and created a lighted knock company, which is where the name Fire Knock comes from.
Yep.
So they started off with lighted knocks and progressed into vanes, and then into arrow shafts, and then into components. But the coolest thing about Fire Knock that, you know, that I really like is he won't make anything that his research doesn't show performs 50% better than anything that's already on the market today. And everything he makes, whether it's a shaft or a component or vanes, aims to fix an issue. I wouldn't say with other arrows or other companies, because that wouldn't be fair to say, but more so the issues that there are just naturally based on physics. With the way an arrow functions and flies and performs in flight.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So that's crazy, because the archery industry but the hunting industry is an industry of somebody coming out with somebody, then all these other companies ripping them off and bringing the same product to market under a different brand.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
What I was going to say is it happens. He has had to go to court on patent stuff quite a few different times. The thing is, he's got his finger on the pulse. And the thing we've talked about before is, if he doesn't, quote, go after one person who tries to rip him off, well, then it sets the precedent for everybody else to be allowed to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, so the reason why a lot of his stuff hasn't been copied or reproduced is because his patents haven't run out yet.
Okay.
Or there's stuff that he has licensed out to other people. Like, I think it's the half out or the full out that Black Eagle uses. Mm-hmm. That's his design. There's some type of collar system or that are on, I forget the broadhead, but that is used in the way that the broadhead shank works. Or in the case of, why can't I, the Ramcats. Who makes the Ramcat broadhead?
It might be Ramcat.
It's a brand.
Yeah, brand is Ramcat. The company that owns them is like Arcus or something like that.
Okay. Yeah. So that Ramcat broadhead, the very tip of it is his design. It's aerodynamic, and only he and the people he licenses it out are allowed to use it. Anything that has a double O-ring on the shank. Let me see if I can unscrew this tip here and I can show you. Any broadhead or field tip that has two O-rings on the shank, that's his patent. And what it does is it allows I don't know if you can see that there.
Oh yeah, I can see that.
But it forces all of the shanks to be centered on the shaft, which, you know, if you've used an old school washer machine before, if it's unbalanced, your washing machine is dancing the jig across your living room, you know? Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So this guy has the title of the smartest. All right. And he has come out. So long story short, it sounds like he has an entire arrow system. Okay.
Multiple aero systems, depending on the diameter and stuff like that.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. And so where does this, this brand Truth Sticks come into play?
So what I've noticed over time is before I started doing my research is you kind of just go with what the industry tells you to do. Mm-hmm. Oh, 166 is thinner. Obviously it's got less wind drag. Oh, 204 is thinner than than a 246. It should penetrate better, and you just run with it. You just roll with it. If you offset your fletchings, it's going to make your arrows spin more within the same distance of span of time, stuff like that. And then you kind of take a step back and you look at the research that has been put out there. Because if you go to FireKnot's website, he actually has a tab for research. Anything he's done, any research that has been done third party, it's out there for the world to see. So when somebody takes third party research that wasn't done by them, and that third party person says, I'll test your products, but whatever the results are, I'm publishing them. He says, cool, do it. That to me speaks volumes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And so what are you saying then at this point?
I'm sorry. I never actually answered your question. Asked where the True Sticks came from. So my thing was, as an archer, before I started doing my own research, I kind of just went with what the industry said and took it for whatever, right? I took it for face value.
If someone says this product is good, okay, that's good enough for me. I'll use it.
Yeah. Essentially, okay. not so much. I'm a little, I don't want to say smarter than that. I feel like that's the wrong way to put it, but I've always done due diligence, mm-hmm. but the research I did was kind of all like, how do I put it? If you're looking for stuff that says high FOC is good, you're going to find stuff that says high FOC is good. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for stuff that says high FOC is bad, you're going to find stuff that says high FOC is bad. So instead of researching both sides, I just looked for, does this product do what it says? Oh, all these people says it does. Great. I'll use it. Mm-hmm. But after listening to, different podcasts that George was on in the past, I decided to give his aero system a try. This is going back 3-4 years ago now. Okay. Before I ever had a YouTube channel, before I ever had a podcast or anything like that. And immediately I saw the benefit of the system. Then I started fast forward. I started recording my own Science of Aero Flight series. And I really started to realize that there aren't a lot of people out there who really understand the flight of arrows. And I don't just mean you pull the trigger, the arrow flies and it hits what you're aiming at, but what happens to the arrow at the instant that you release your string? What happens to your arrow as it's flying? What happens to your arrow when it impacts the target? And once I really started to dive into each of those things individually, I really started to realize that the industry doesn't have all the information. Either it doesn't have it, or it seems like they aren't very interested on letting it get out. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about all of that in depth in that Science of Aero Flight series. We went through the individual aero diameters. We went from 246 to 300 down to 204 down to 166, and talked about the benefits of them, because let's face it, every aero has a benefit. But we also talked about both the flaws in, for example, what does a wider, like a thicker wall do to your aero in flight? What does a half out do to the integrity of the system from beginning to end, from front to back? And once I saw that there weren't really, don't get me wrong, there are other companies out there who are doing this. There are other companies who make the same arrows that I'm going to offer. I'm not saying I'm making something brand new, but there weren't many people I was talking to that had this kind of information. And there's no one within 50 miles of me in any direction who are building these arrows. So I want to, as a teacher, my goal is to always educate and try to give people informed information. And my thing is, if you're going to go in the woods and shoot at an animal and you're going to take a life, I feel like we owe it to the animal to at least know what our equipment is going to do. And if you know how your equipment's going to behave and you accept the upside and the downside, then cool, you've made an educated choice. And that's really my end goal as far as the education is concerned. And if anyone believes in the education I'm putting out there and is interested in trying the product, hopefully they like to support us. And, I'd be more than happy to make them an arrow.
All right. So here's where this is called the Hunting Gear Podcast, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so your average guy buys some arrows, whether he gets them custom made or not, or he buys them in Walmart and does the inserts himself or takes them to a bow shop and they set them up, whatever the case is. He puts them onto his bow. He draws his bow back. he releases the arrow, it hits the target, and he's happy with that. Why do we as hunters need to know all the ins and outs of arrow flight if we are also hitting our target where we want it?
So hitting the target is only part of the equation. Hitting the target is the beginning of harvesting an animal, because now your arrow needs to go through that animal. How deep does it need to penetrate in order to make contact with the vitals? If you're talking about a bear, if you listen to the Brian Melvin episode that we recorded earlier in the year, his bear had 9 inches of fat on both sides, which means your arrow needs to penetrate the 9 inches of fat plus the hide and however deep into the chest cavity just to make contact with the beginning of those vitals. You know, so that's part of it, is the impact and how your arrow behaves on impact. There's also, did that person only shoot one arrow? Are they shooting the same arrow at the target? Do they realize that out of a dozen arrows, four group in one place and four group in another, and then you have four flyers? You know, all of these things can be taken into consideration. But I do agree with you. Any arrow will kill any animal if you put it in the right place and it penetrates enough. You're not wrong.
Right. Okay. What's something that I don't know? Like, talk to me a little bit about, like, so what I'm hearing from you is I build arrows for you, but there's something special about these arrows that you're building. Yes. What makes these arrows special?
So that would be going into the arrow concept system, essentially the building process that we use and how we build the arrow. If you want me to go into that, I can.
Yes.
So arrow concept, I don't have any unbuilt arrows. Everything I have now has been built already, but we'll start with the front of the arrow. So arrow concept in its most basic form is where you have a 6-inch tube glued to the inside of your arrow shaft. And what that does is they're made of different modulus, which is essentially like the quality or the stiffness. I don't know the exact term. Don't quote me on that. But
it's not fine, is it?
No. It essentially flexes at a different rate than the outer shaft does.
Okay.
And from a science standpoint, when you have two things that are connected that flex at a different rate, they cancel each other out, which means that it doesn't allow it, because it's double walled, it doesn't allow the arrow to flex as much on release, but then it also forces it to recover faster once it's in the air, because it stops that flexing of the arrow.
Okay.
So right off the bat, that is one of the two biggest components of arrow of the build. On top of that is the insert. The way that inserts are made is when you build the arrow, you chip for the front of the arrow. So you put like an angle on the front of the arrow, and the insert has the opposite, the reverse chamfer. So when you put them on together, it's like a V going inside of a V, and they lock into each other. I'm sure all of us, or many of us who are listening to this podcast, you've shot an arrow, hit a rock, whether it went through a deer or not. You go and pick it up, your insert is 4 inches into the arrow shaft, you know, and your arrow shaft is mushroomed around. Because of the way the front of this arrow pairs or marries each other, it stops that from happening. So right off the bat, now you have an arrow that recovers faster in air and an arrow that's more durable upon impact. On top of that, are you familiar with the node of an arrow?
No.
So the node of the arrow, every arrow flexes. It doesn't matter. And every arrow in flight never actually fully stops flexing. It will continue to flex no matter how far you shoot it until it impacts your target. The node of the arrow is the spot in which, like, the flexing point, almost like the vertex of that flex. When you use a dropaway rest, your arrow sits on that rest at one point. And on release, the moment you release that string, your arrow wants to flex.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're not on the flexing point, your arrow is either going to lift or drop on that rest as you go to shoot, which means it's going to shoot differently from shot to shot, and it's going to plane immediately upon the shot. Having this in the middle, having this tube in here and having the stiffness in there and the whole resonation thing, the node is actually elongated. So instead of it being one specific spot on your arrow shaft, now you have about an inch of node to work with. So Some arrow rests out there. You can slide back and forth and force your arrow to sit on the note. Others you can't. So if you have a sight that you can't or a rest that you can't adjust forward and back, that, you know, having this elongated is going to give you a better chance of having your arrow sit on that. Yeah. So and then the next part of that would be the vanes. These are arrow vane 2. They're designed as an airfoil. Stop me if I'm getting a little too in depth with any of this stuff.
No, go for it. That's the point.
Fantastic. So Aerovane, Dorge now offers Aerovane 2 and 3. Aerovane 1 has been discontinued because it didn't function the way he wanted it to when it was made. Long story short, every vane on the market functions off of drag. You know, it flies through the air, air hits it, the vanes drag, it slows your arrow down, it forces the arrow to rotate. These, on the other hand, they work, they're an airfoil, which means they manipulate the way the air goes around them, and all forces work in the same direction. So you have a lift and a drag force that are both working to the right, instead of having a wind drag going in one way and an opposite drag going the other, which is what you get with, you know, a typical vane out on the market. Most vanes on the market are smooth. These are not smooth. They're textured. Not only are they textured, they're textured in three different regions. Just like water is going to go to the smoothest, easiest path of resistance, just like a deer. So why would we want air to hit a smooth surface? If you have it rough, you force the air to interact less with the vane, which creates less wind drag, which creates, you know, allows you to retain more energy. And the spin on this, don't quote me on these numbers, I have them written somewhere. But a typical vane, I don't want to give any names because the last thing I want to do here is, like, you know, bash any other brands or anything like that. But there are brands out there that have been tested against these that at 260 feet per second, they do anywhere from 8 to 12 rotations. Aero vane will do about 65 in the first 20 yards. When you go up to 300 feet per second, the other one is still doing about 8 to 12 or 10 to 12. The aero vane is doing over 100. And the faster you go, the faster air, the more aero vane spins. Normal vanes, the way they work is eventually you hit a point where the counter force is stronger than the drag force. So you actually get less rotation out of your vanes. So
these vanes that you would be using on these arrows are such as they increase the spin of the arrow.
They increase the spin of the arrow, and they also reduce drag. They reduce the wind signature, which is essentially how much of the air is affected by your arrow as it travels through air.
But don't you need drag in order to rotate the arrow?
Only if your vanes are designed that way. So they're basically designed after airplane wings. And when he was designing these, I think it was the professor's name was Professor Lele out of Michigan University. I could be completely wrong with that. But Dorge got a professor in aerodynamics, one of the top guys in aerodynamics in the country. And they designed these together. It's my understanding that the way airplane wings work is they don't work off of drag, because eventually the faster you go, the more drag you get, it would bring the plane down. And instead, they manipulate the way the air moves. So they end up with more air moving under the wing or above the wing. I forget. But it forces the air to move more over one than the other, which forces it to lift. So essentially, the easiest way to explain this would be aerovane vanes work off of a lift force. The more air that goes over it, the more they want to lift, except it's not lifting up. They're lifting in rotation. Versus regular vanes that work off of drag force, which requires an amount of friction between the vanes and the air to work.
So with this reduced friction, you're, I don't know, if you were going to take these vanes and put them on an IBO certified arrow or something like that, you would have a faster feet per second IBO speed.
Well, not wholeheartedly. If the vanes that you have originally are lighter than these, then no, you're not going to have a faster, you know, shooting bow on release. What you are going to have, though, is a bow that retains a better trajectory down, an arrow that retains a better trajectory down range, which means that it wastes less energy going downrange, which allows you to retain more energy on impact.
Okay. So is this about how the arrow travels through the air, or is this about how much penetration you get on the target?
In reference to the vanes or the arrow as a whole?
Let's continue the conversation about vanes, right? Because I don't know, maybe I'm dumb here and maybe I'm a little confused, but what you've said is these vanes increase rotation. Okay. Mm-hmm. They prevent
and reduce wind drag
and reduce wind drag.
Yes.
Wind, like when I hear the word drag, I hear resistance, right? Meaning mm-hmm. the arrow is going to slow down the more drag there is on, but at the same time, I've also been told in the past that drag on the fletchings is what balances the arrow. So the more drag on the back end, the quicker your arrow will stabilize. Is that accurate?
Yes, but it's because it slows your arrow down.
Okay.
So think about it like this, right? You have a F-150 and a Corvette driving down the road together. If they're both doing 40 miles an hour, you might not really see much of a difference in the ride. Mm-hmm. You hit 80 miles an hour, though, you're going to feel it in your truck. You're definitely not going to feel it in the Corvette. You know, so this is all really based on aerodynamics. And the faster something goes, the more aerodynamics matter. Okay. And to put it in perspective, like Formula One race cars, 85% of the engine output goes towards fighting wind drag, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah. Okay. So if you were to compare some random arrow in someone's quiver and then one that you build with all these components in it, what does your arrow do that the other arrow doesn't?
Okay. Just
anything from the time it leaves your bow to the time it hits the target.
Okay. So to keep it as simple as I can, on release, your arrow is going to flex less and it's going to react identically from arrow to arrow across your dozen.
Is that because your arrow has a stiffer spine?
No. It's actually like this arrow I have right here is a 350 spine. It's my personal arrow, believe it or not. Side note, you had mentioned balance with the drag. I'm testing something out this year. This arrow I'm going to be hunting with this year is going to be a 6% FOC arrow, which I get kind of like the hoot, you know, when I tell people. But the research that we've done and what I'm kind of going towards is that an arrow that's more balanced has weight that works as a whole versus an arrow that has more weight towards the front and just has the arrow coming along for the ride.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to your question. On release, the arrow is going to flex less simply because of that tube in the front of, you know, glued into the front of the arrow. Recovery rates, depending on whether you're using a 166, 204, 246, 300, an arrow can take anywhere from 16 to 24 yards to fully recover, which means, you know, it majority of the flexing has recovered. These arrows will recover in 8 feet. So the recovery rate is insanely higher or faster or whatever, you know, however you want to put that.
Is that at a 70-pound draw, 30-inch draw, 70-pound bow?
Yeah. So his testing that he's done is on a 70-pound bow, 30-inch draw.
Okay.
With a, I think he says 80% let off. Don't quote me on the let off. But the let off itself causes more issues in flight also on its own. We could talk about that in a second.
Okay.
But in flight, there are a lot of different things that are happening to your arrow. So a lot of people think that an arrow flexes just like normal, just like up and down. When an arrow is flying, it flexes more like a snake going across the ground. It does not flex on one specific point. And the longer your arrow is, the more flexing points you have in flight.
Yeah.
You know, so again, right off the bat with that tube on the front of the arrow, that's going to help your arrow recover faster. There's that issue with the ballooning where the arrow wants to expand. The arrow is always oscillating, so it's always expanding and contracting. What that insert system does, it doesn't allow it to expand beyond the size of the insert.
Okay.
You know, so there's that. There's the, if you're retaining more energy on in flight and on release and on impact, then that's going to transmit into better penetration. You know, we've all seen the videos, whether on YouTube or Instagram or whatever, where someone, you know, someone shoots at a deer and they're shooting a crazy bow and they shoot him under 15 yards, and that arrow hits 4 inches and just dies.
Yeah.
You know, it only penetrates 4 inches and it dies. I don't know their full setup, so I can't, you know, speak on how this would compare to that. But one of the big things that we believe causes that, and through the research, is the fact that the arrow is not recovered. And trying to pull something through something else that's moving is going to be a lot harder than pulling something through that doesn't move at all.
I've never thought about that. I have seen that on several videos where, you know, at 20 yards, you smoke something and it, you know, 20, 30 yards, it just, the arrow goes right through them. But I don't know, let's say it's a deer at the bottom of your tree stand, you're shooting straight down and it doesn't go through. Uh-huh. You would think that it's, let me ask you this. Do you know when an arrow hits top speed? Is it right out of the bow?
It's gotta be.
Yeah.
It has to be right out of the bow because that's where it has the most energy. Anything from there is just, what's the word? It's parasitic energy loss is the way he puts it. And it's just eating away at it. So yeah, it's gotta be right when it comes
out. Yeah. But, and then, so maybe that is because the arrow has not recovered and it's in flexation still, and it hits the deer and it's.
Yeah. And there's more to it than just that. Like, let's talk about high let off here for a second. What does that mean? Right. A high let off means when you're pulling your bow, you hit a plateau, which is your bow's top weight. And it's not at an instant. It is for a period of time that you're drawing that weight. Anyone who's seen a draw curve sees this. It goes up, it plateaus, it comes back down. Mm-hmm. So what is happening? Your arrow on release, you're going from 7 pounds of force to 70 pounds of force, staying at 70 pounds of force, and then dropping back down to zero as that string comes to rest. So now what's happening? Let me see if I can get it in frame. I don't even have anything to show you with, but essentially from 7 to 70, your arrow flexes a little bit more. Then it hits 70, it flexes the most. And then it's not a gradual, consistent reduction from top to bottom as far as energy transfer is concerned. It's very aggressive. And what that causes is what's called microflex in your arrow shaft. And that is probably the number one downside to these newer bows. Yes, bows are faster. Yes, bows are doing a lot more stuff. But they also have extremely high let-off, which we didn't have in the 80s and 90s. You know, compound bows performed closer to the way a traditional arrow works. It's the same problem that is caused by having a high FOC. We all know heavier objects take more energy to move. So if you're shooting a bow that is, you know, 20% FOC compared to 15% FOC compared to 10% FOC, well, the 20% FOC is going to take more energy to get that front of the arrow moving, which means your arrow is going to flex more upon release. Mm-hmm. The 15% is going to flex less, and the 10% is going to flex even more. It's going to flex less, even more less than that.
Yeah.
You know, so that's where the balance of an arrow comes into play. And the less of a let off you have, which we would personally recommend, the least let off you can handle, the better your arrow flight is going to be. You know, but those are the issues that are caused by high let off. The same issue is caused by high FOC. And when you combine the two, you're exacerbating the negative effects of each of them.
Okay. All right. So as the arrow comes out, it flexes less in a shorter amount of time and it's recovered quicker. Uh-huh. It hit, then is when the veins kind of take over and they start their rotation instantly, but they're rotating quicker. Does a heavier rotating arrow mean better accuracy downrange?
It can.
Okay.
It can. If your bow isn't tuned and your arrow, you know, your arrows aren't shooting the same, then nothing's going to help your accuracy. You know, if your arrows aren't all consistent, I mean, I don't want to say everyone, most people have heard about Reg Ferry at this point, and his tuning system works, man. I mean, I was big into the high FOC, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, but to build an arrow and to insert tune every single arrow, then to knock tune every single arrow, it's a lot of time downrange. Where when we build our arrows, because everything is concentric, which means it's all centered on the shaft, you know, on the inside of the shaft, mm-hmm. and we locate the first dynamic bend, which is essentially where the arrow wants to flex first on release, we fletch every single arrow with that dynamic bend up, which means every arrow is going to flex in the exact same direction, the exact same way on every single shot. So if you're someone like myself who doesn't have a lot of time, something like this can help you spend more time shooting and less time trying to figure out what you need to get done or how to get your bow to shoot the best it can.
Right, right. Okay, the arrow spinning downrange. Mm-hmm. Does rotation help with stabilization?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So and the closer you can get to what they call a gyro spin, which is a true center spin, which, like I said, an arrow never stops flexing. Mm-hmm. So you can't ever get to like a true tight spin. But the tighter the spin, the more true it'll fly. And the better it'll recover, and it all works together. But yeah.
Okay. So quicker. So far I've heard quicker stabilization. Mm-hmm. Right. Quicker stabilization in flight, mm-hmm. At a shorter distance. And then when we do hit our target, right? So it's stable, which to me means better accuracy. And so when that arrow then is stable, right? What's the benefit past that? So now it's stable. What's the benefit of that arrow now that it's been stabilized in a shorter period of time and distance?
Okay. So right off the bat, you're retaining energy. Anything that isn't straight, take something, look at yourself going down the road. Everyone's done it as a kid. I still do it as an adult. You put your hand out the window and you do one of these going down the road, right?
Yep.
If your hand is straight, it cuts straight through the air. You feel no resistance. Mm-hmm. The second you move your hand, you feel your wrist wants to snap down and your wrist wants to snap up. Your arrow is functioning the same way. The farther away from recovered your arrow is, the more resistance you're going to get and the more planing you're going to get in flight.
Yeah.
The other cool thing about this system is I don't want to say all arrows because I don't know that to be 100% true, but the traditional arrow flight is not parallel to the ground. If you're shooting on the ground, your arrows tend to travel on a little bit of a down slope. These travel horizontal to the ground, which means you have less trajectory deprivation over time, which allows you to have more space in your sight tape or your sight if you're someone who's shooting 3D or target, or if you're a Western hunter taking those long shots. This is something that could help you get a little bit more distance out of your sight also.
Doesn't that mean that you have a slower arrow?
Getting more distance or less?
No, if you have space between your...
I'm sorry. I'm not talking about space between your pins. I'm saying let's say right now the farthest you can get out of your sight is 80 yards. Mm-hmm. Shooting something like this might be able to get you out to 90.
Okay.
So it doesn't close your gap. So this is really important.
Okay.
And this is some stuff that a lot of people don't really start to pay attention to, is that these arrows will perform better, but it's not from zero to, 100 yards. Mm-hmm. To be honest with you, as far as performance and stuff like that, with the exception of penetration, from 0 to 30, you're not going to see much of a change in impact as far as impacting higher or lower. But from 30 to, say, 50 or 60 yards, you're going to see your arrows start to impact a little bit higher. And then beyond 60 yards, you're going to see your arrows impacting a little bit higher than that. So the longer your arrow is traveling, the bigger, the more time your arrow has to distance itself from a traditional arrow that maybe you've shot in the past.
So a flatter trajectory at a longer range.
Yes. And I have a buddy of mine who, I don't want to give out any names yet. I have about 5 or 6 dozen out right now to people who are willing to put these arrows through whatever animals they could find. Boar, deer, bear, turkey, elk, possibly, someone I sent these out to, they were testing out the arrows the other day. And their original arrows that they were shooting were, say, 430 grains. Mm-hmm. They put these arrows on that were 465 grains, never had to change the tape. So he's able to shoot a heavier arrow with the same sight tape.
Okay. I mean, okay, I get it. And then all that translates into reduced energy loss, meaning your arrow is losing less energy over the course of its travel. And it because of that, you're able to, let's say, 465 grain arrows, your system is penetrating deeper because it has less energy loss.
Less energy loss, and on impact, it cannot fall apart. What I mean by fall apart is, and this is more so high FOC versus not FOC. Mm-hmm. When you have a high FOC, think about the best way I've found to explain this is take a pool noodle and attach a rock to it and throw it down your driveway. Your pool noodle is going to follow the rock. But the moment your rock hits something, that pool noodle is going all over the place, which means your rock or your broadhead, you know, bring it back to arrows. Now your broadhead has to do all of this work to pull this flapping arrow through the animal. I'm not saying you're not going to get penetration. There's plenty of stuff out there that says, yeah, high FOC can help you with penetration. And there's people putting arrows through, you know, shoulders. What I don't want to give up as an archer, I don't want to give up trajectory and I don't want to give up speed. I've had deer jump a string at less than 15 yards shooting 290 feet per second. So to me, having to reduce speed to trade for high FOC wasn't something I wanted to do anymore. And like I said, I've done it in the past. It's just not, I didn't like the way the arrows flew at that time.
Yeah. Are there any differences in tuning for these arrows as opposed to the normal arrows that you would buy at a store?
Tuning your bow is pretty much tuning your bow, right? Like you got it, you shoot it through paper, you adjust it, you know, you get it to where you're comfortable with it. So the tuning process is essentially the same.
Okay.
What's really nice about it is when you're shooting the same spine, I shouldn't say spine, when you have your arrows fletched to the first dynamic bend, every arrow is going to behave the same way. So if you shoot one arrow through paper, you don't have to shoot all 12 arrows through paper. You don't have to tune each individual arrow. So okay. I guess to answer your question, is there a difference in bow tuning? No, you're going to tune your bow the same way. Is there a difference in arrow tuning? Yeah, essentially, unless you want to use a two-blade arrow or a two-blade broadhead, which we could talk about if you want. Other than that, you don't have to worry about anything other than putting your arrow on your bow, tuning your bow, and going out and enjoying the time on the range.
What works better in the field with your arrow, a fixed blade or a mechanical?
With my arrow, the difference is there is no difference. I mean, the arrow is going to fly just fine. As far as with irregardless of the arrow, I do have my own stance on fixed blade versus mechanical, and there's a couple different ones. First off, my thing with a mechanical is there's moving parts. Anything with moving parts has more of a chance of failing than something that doesn't have moving parts. That's just the here and there of it. You know what I mean? The other part of that is a mechanical broadhead has to open, which means it needs to exert a force exerted on it, and then it's going to exert force as it opens. If you shoot a deer perfectly broadside, no matter what angle, both blades are going to open and touch the deer at the same time. But if you shoot a deer at an angle, quartering to, quartering away, one blade is going to exert force onto the animal before the other, which is why you see a lot of videos of mechanical broadheads hitting a deer and doing a 45 degree angle, you know, or people that say they shot a deer from the ground and it came out their belly and they don't really have an understanding as to why.
Yeah.
So as far as functionality and working with the arrow, they'll both work. But as far as standing on their own, that those are my reservations with mechanical broadheads.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So a lot of interesting things that have been said here and claims or whatever. And obviously a guy doesn't know until he tries.
Yeah.
I guess there's two prices here, right? There is do you charge them for the arrow and then another fee for the build? Or is it something where you just say, this is what it's cost. You pay me and I send you everything else. I send you everything.
It's kind of in the middle. Okay. It's a little bit of both.
How does your process work then?
My process essentially is somebody calls me, contacts me, emails me, tells me they might be interested in my arrow. The first thing I'm going to ask them is, what's your draw length? What's your draw weight? How far are you shooting and what are you shooting at? Because the arrow I'm going to build, for example, for a target shooter is going to be a little bit different, not so much in the build, but more so in the diameter that I'm going to recommend for them. So I want to know their application, how far are they shooting, and what's their bow setup. Because to be honest with you, I don't want to sell something. I don't want to sell someone something they don't need. Mm-hmm. Everyone that we have partnered with, you know, through Wing and Tail Outdoors, They're someone I believe in. And a lot of people, just about everyone that I've partnered with will not sell you something they don't believe you need. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to take that from the people that I believe in, and I'm going to run with that as well. So they're going to contact me. They're going to tell me what they're interested, what they're doing. For example, if somebody is shooting if someone is shooting target and hunting, I'm probably going to recommend a 246. If someone is only target shooting, I'm going to recommend a 300 diameter arrow. Okay. At this time, I don't offer a 166 or a 204. There's multiple reasons for that. Number one, the builds are a lot more intense. They take a lot more concentration, because the insert that is needed for a 204 and a 166 is the weak point of the entire arrow build. I don't know if you're familiar with how an outsert or a half out works, but a full outsert literally sits completely on the outside of an arrow shaft, which means that there's nothing on the inside to help with the structural integrity of that. So if you impact at an angle or something, that's the first part that's going to break. Same issue with a 204, but it's a half out. So it has a little bit of stuff on the inside, so it's a little bit more durable than, say, a 166, but it's not as durable as a 246.
Okay.
So those are the, I don't want to make anything that I personally wouldn't shoot out in the field. And right now, that's not something I would shoot in the field. Gotcha. So it's just not something that I want to offer.
So range arrows are going to be a different build. Mm-hmm. Hunting elk at 60 yards is going to be a different build versus mm-hmm. whitetail at 30 yards.
Yeah. Now, I have someone, for example, a buddy of mine up in New Hampshire. He ordered a set of arrows for me. He's a 31.5-inch draw length.
Okay.
For our build, the 6-inch shaft, the 6-inch tube on the inside wouldn't be enough. So I called up Dorch. He said, no problem. He inserted a 12-inch shaft into the arrow. Now, for me, that's not something I could do, because you need like a special like vacuum or whatever to do it. It's like a $10,000 machine. I don't have that. But the nice thing about Dorch is he's really out there to educate and help people. So he was willing to do that for me, and I didn't have to charge my friend any more, mm-hmm. For that, So yeah. And where was I with that? So the standard build is going to be a 1.0. My arrows are, so everything I've explained so far is arrow concept 1.0, where you have a tube glued to the inside of the front of your arrow. Mm-hmm. In the future, as I do this more and more and more, I may offer 2.0. which is where you have a second tube glued into the back of the arrow. But it's such an advanced system, and it flies so differently, that if people tried it without ever shooting 1.0 first, they probably would think it was awful, because they won't be able to get a sight tape to match up and all these other things. So if there's anyone out there who like is dead set on a 2.0, I'm not going to offer that on like my website or anything like that. But if they want to call me and they're really dead set on it, I need to make sure that they understand what it really is before I offer it to them.
Gotcha.
Essentially, if they want me to build the arrow out the door, right now I'm looking at about $210 for the whole build, a dozen arrows out the door with unlit knocks. Anyone who listened to my podcast that aired this morning, I've offered a little special, grand opening deal, if you will. Yep. Anyone who leaves a 5-star review for us, there's a special deal for you there. Anyone who follows us on Instagram, there's a special deal for you there. And YouTube, same thing. So if you guys want that deal, you're just going to have to listen through today's podcast and find it.
Gotcha. So $210 uh-huh. for a custom arrow build to your uh-huh. specs by uh-huh. you. You're handling everything, and that's uh-huh. out the door. Does that include shipping?
So the one deal that I'm offering right now is if they leave the review down below, I will ship it for free.
Okay.
All right. So yeah. And then, and the other thing is, before I forget, we offer two different quality. We offer a regular arrow and a premium arrow. And this is what sets the arrow shaft apart from others. He also has a patent for this. And the cool thing is, sidebar, you guys go to fireknock.com and you look, there's a list there where he literally has every single patent that he has and what the purpose of the patent is. What Dorch has been able to do is every spine on the market. How do you, before I go into it, how do you understand a spine works? Like from the front of the arrow to the back of the arrow.
Yeah. So stiffness of the spine mm-hmm. and the stiffer the spine, the quicker recovery from flex.
Okay. Are you of the belief that the spine is in the same location, both in the front and the back of the arrow?
Yes.
Okay. That is a fallacy.
Okay. Spine of an arrow is the spine is not equal from the back to the front.
Not in location, like where it's located on the arrow is not the same from the front to the back.
Okay.
It actually spirals around the arrow. That's why when you buy a set of arrows from a store that says spine aligned, they're spine aligned at 32 inches. The moment you cut that arrow down, the spine or the location of the bend in the middle of the arrow has now moved. Uh-huh. If you take these arrows and split them into three sections and try to find the spine of each individual section and then look down the arrow, they're not in line with each other. That's why, you know, you try to find it in the middle. Now, one of his patents, no, sorry.
I was just going to say, so would it be in my best interest that if I'm going to cut in two, let's just say I want to cut 2 inches off of an arrow. Mm-hmm. It would be in my best interest to cut an inch off the front and an inch off the back?
Regardless of anytime you cut an arrow, you want to take a little bit off both ends. You should definitely spin your arrows before you put anything in them, as far as inserts or tips or anything, because one end of the arrow will be straighter than the other. Yeah. It's just in the way that arrows are made.
Okay.
But anytime you do anything to your arrow, cut it shorter. Add, you know, change the vanes to a different weight. Mm-hmm. Add a wrap, change your knock, put in a lighted knock, put in an insert. Whatever the case is, you need to respine your arrow.
Gotcha.
Your arrow spine will move with anything that you do to it.
Gotcha.
And your arrow spine will move as you shoot that particular arrow more. So the two different arrows, or the two different spines, or not spines, I'm sorry, the two different shafts that we offer are the Fire Knock Sport Weave and the Fire Knock Arrow Weave. The Sport Weave is essentially a more pocket-friendly version, I guess you could say, of the Arrow Weave.
Gotcha.
The Arrow Weave, I think, is like somewhere between 15 and 20 layers. Don't quote me on the exact number. But each layer has a purpose. One layer is meant for durability. The next layer literally fabricates a spine. The Arrow Weave spines are Dorge's claim is that they're the only spine on the market that is linear from front to back, and it's the only spine on the market that will not move as you shoot it because of the way that it's designed. So basically what he does, he'll put, you know, a couple layers straight, then he'll put a couple layers 45, then he'll put a couple layers 45, then he'll do a, you know, a weave pattern, and that's where you get the weave portion of the name. Okay. As far as functionality, both the Sport Weave and the Arrow Weave will function the same. They will fly the same. The Arrow Weave will shoot more consistently for longer because the spine isn't moving, and it has more layers, which makes it a little bit more durable when compared to the Sport Weave. When I say more durable, I don't mean like the Sport Weave is a shitty arrow or, you know, it's going to, you know, die out after a few shots. It's just, you know, maybe it lasts 1,000 shots instead of 2,000 shots.
Yeah.
Type of deal, you know?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, that's awesome, man.
Yep. And then with the premium, obviously there needs to be a different price point. I put some numbers together today. It looks like the standard arrows are going to come in at, like I said, anywhere from 200 to 210. I haven't, you know, decided yet, but we have those discounts or whatever. And then the premium is going to be more somewhere around 250, 260, because okay. The shafts, you know, the shafts cost a bit more.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. I know that there's other, and that's built too, because I know that there's other high end arrows that are out there that are over $200 per dozen, and that's yep. unbuilt. So
yes.
That seems, you know, seems fairly well. And all of the, I guess, science behind and the manufacturing behind what you've said is very interesting. If people want to reach out to you and are interested in speaking with you about this arrow build, where should we send them?
So before I tell them where to go, please, before you order anything, get in touch with me. I don't want you to buy anything that you don't understand, mm-hmm. right? Like the big thing we talk about is you can't understand the benefit of something until you understand the problem that it fixes,
right?
Right. So if I tell you, like, you know, my best friend, my best man, he goes, why should I spend X amount of dollars on your arrows when I can go to the store and I could buy the same a dozen arrows for $75? Mm-hmm. I said, I'm glad you asked me the question. I don't want you to buy them unless you know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And I sat down with him and I talked to him about it.
Yep.
The truth is, this is all science-based. And if you're not a science guy and you don't care about the science, then you're not going to see the benefit in these arrows.
Yeah.
That's just the truth of it. If people want to reach out to me, Instagram or email right now are the two best ways to reach out to me. Our Instagram, it's still all through the Wing and Tail Outdoors. From a business standpoint, the two entities are going to be separate. Not that the listeners really care about that or anything, but it's all going to be through the same thing. It's all through me. It's all through Wing and Tail Outdoors. So wingandtail.outdoors, I believe, is what we are on Instagram, or Wing and Tail Outdoors is the handle. And if you want to reach me through email, it's wingandtail.chris@gmail.com.
Perfect.
Yeah. You know, the standard arrow, like I said, you know, I could show it to you now, I guess. I don't think I showed it to you. But this is the decal on the arrow for now. It'll have the ID and the spine on it. These are an example of the OG sticks with the premium label there, I guess you could say. They are made with the company colors, two green and an orange vein with a green knock. I'm thinking about maybe offering orange knocks as well as part of our signature arrow.
Yeah.
Now, if people, I get it. Green and orange isn't some people's, you know, jive, and that's fine. I'm also offering the decals for no extra charge in black and white if people prefer that instead. I do have the ability to order other veins. I just don't have them in stock, like readily on hand. So if people are like, you know what, my whole bow is blue and red, can you make me blue and red veins? Absolutely. I just need to order them. It's not going to add more to the price or anything like that. It's just going to add a little bit of time to the build. Same thing with the knocks. And then in the future, something I'm toying with, I just have to see how much trouble it's going to be to do it. I might offer for like an extra $5 or $10 in the future, like custom colors on the decal too. So if people want to keep that blue and, you know, that red and blue across the board, you know, I don't need people to be walking around with my color. You know what I mean? It is what it is. It's right. What I like. So yeah. If somebody wants a different color, you know, it's just going to take me some time to produce that product, you know, so that's where the extra charge comes in. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome, dude. Well,
and the website.
Yeah, website.
I have a website. It is not complete. I will be honest. I am not a computer techie guy, and I'm doing this completely on my own. So the website is up. It's wingandtailoutdoors.com. Just bear with me as I update it and get the stuff going. Don't order anything through the website right now. Email me or DM me. But at least if you want to see what there is, or you know, you want to see like the description of the arrows, that's up there already. Some of the science of arrow flight descriptions, like I have a whole section on there about the science. I have a section on there about our build process and why it's different, and stuff like that. You know, so if you're just interested in the information, that's on there, and you can get it there.
Perfect, man. Perfect. Well, good luck. Hopefully this takes off, and hopefully what you've said today sparks some interest in some of the listeners. And thanks for hopping on short notice. I know yesterday we couldn't do it because you had the anniversary, you got a baby, and your life is busy right now. So
busy, man.
And then now you're adding this on your table. So good luck with everything. Thanks for hopping on, and good luck with Truth Sticks, man.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. Have a great week.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.